wants you to know a lot of the episodes have mostly clean language, but this episode has some words in it that aren't meant for all ages. So, if you have kids like me in your house, you may want to put some headphones on for this one. You've been warned. Done, done, done.
Welcome, everybody, to this episode of the Daddy Unscripted podcast. I am Tim Wheaton. I am the creator and host of the podcast, and I'm very excited to be sitting down with Ryan Stasek of Umphrey's McGee for this episode today. Ryan and I go back in time a handful of years. Umphrey's McGee is a fantastic band out of Chicago, which you should be listening to if you are not. I started listening to them back, I believe, in 2001 and went to my first Umphrey's McGee show in probably 2004, I believe it was. And before one of the shows locally here in the Los Angeles area, I just started talking about whatever with Ryan and with him and my wife, and I think my brother may have been there talking with us as well. And I don't know if you all know this, but I also do photography, and I do concert photography, and I started taking photos of them at their local shows and started doing it just on behalf of the band, talking with the manager. And so one show specifically, when I was back in the day when I had my curly mustachio, I was shooting one of their shows and was down in the pit, and Ryan kept making this little gesture to me about my mustache and that he basically approved of it. And I'm not saying that we didn't talk about that, really. We should have talked about that in this episode. We did not. But it wasn't much longer after that that Ryan himself had an awesome handlebar mustache. And we would talk with each other. Yes, we were grown men talking to each other over text about what wax are you using for your mustache and what products are you using, etc. And so we started kind of bonding over that. And then there was a photo shoot, which I used for my artwork for this episode on Facebook and Twitter and all social media, that I ended up getting some clothing from Beta Brand, which I did a lot of product photos for, which they are still not yet a sponsor, but you guys should be a sponsor. And Ryan and I did a photo shoot for Beta Brand with our mustaches. And some of them we were wearing our sports team's hats because that seemed fitting because we are such big sports fanatics. He for the Pittsburgh teams and the Pirates specifically in baseball, and me for the Boston Red Sox. And that photo was on the Beta Brand delivery truck up in San Francisco Bay Area for the course of that year, which is pretty awesome. So Ryan and I have always kind of talked here and there. And when he had his daughter a little over three years ago now, I was very excited for him and for that new journey that he was going to be taking. So when I started this podcast, he was like one of the first people that jumped into my mind. I would love to have Ryan on, obviously, because he and I have a lot of things in common and we get along really well. But also for the obvious reason of, hey, maybe this will get some listenership into the podcast, etc., some other listeners that wouldn't normally be listening into this. So I was very excited when he was so gracious to approve of doing that and give some of his time up. So this is our sit down discussion about being dads and what that kind of means for him and what his relationship was and is with his father as well. And I hope that you guys get a lot out of this and that you enjoy it, because it's basically two guys talking very loosely about those subjects. So with no further ado, here is myself with Ryan Stasek. Welcome, everybody, to the Daddy Unscripted podcast. Today, I'm very excited to be sitting down remotely with Ryan Stasek, bassist extraordinaire from Umphrey's McGee, which you may or may not be listening to, and if you aren't, you should be. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be.
Yeah. So, Ryan Well, I'll tell a little more about our history, but we've known each other for a handful of years now. And I will say right here, I'm very appreciative of your support and always being open to lending a helping hand to me, whether it's recording this or shooting photo shoots with men's clothing, whatever it may be.
Sounds sexy.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, my contact with MeUndies ended fairly quickly, or I would have been sending you even more awkward requests.
And you know what? I do, shameful plug, but the best underwear I've ever worn, and my wife and I can match, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's true. And when I had that very brief time with them, my friends and I, we went on our annual man trip, and MeUndies gave us a bunch of underwear to bring along on the trip and do like some video and photo shoot and everything. And everybody was basically clamoring over taking home some of the underwear because it really is the most amazing underwear. So I just ended any possible sponsorships from other underwear companies, but hopefully maybe MeUndies will pick me up now.
Yeah. And I actually didn't know you were going to open with an underwear there. I thought we were going to do more of a mustache pun, you know, because I've known you for a handlebar full of years.
Yes, very true. I said to my wife yesterday, I said, I wish I had gotten screenshots or something from the Pirates game that you were at, which was a Cubs Pirates game.
It could have been. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. For 12 years, no matter who the Cubs were playing, I wore black and gold full of Pirates gear.
Yeah.
To Wrigley.
I think it was a Cubs-Pirates game, and we were watching the game, and you were there in the stands, and the guys, like, panned over to you. I think it was the Pirates broadcast, and they talked about your mustache.
It was actually Bob Walk because my family was watching Root Sports Pittsburgh, and he liked the old-time look. I had the throwback hat from the 70s, and I had the Clemente yellow jersey. And then that's the best part of being at Wrigley is you know, they're really good fans, but if you love baseball and you understand baseball and you respect 2-1, nobody's making fun of that jersey. So you can wear that any ballpark, and it deserves respect.
Yeah, agreed. So Ryan has how old is your daughter now?
My daughter Amelia just turned 3 on July 11th.
Okay. Happy belated birthday to her. She is ridiculously adorable. I mean, I feel lame saying adorable as a grown man, but that is what she is.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
So Ryan has been a dad for a little over 3 years, and I remember, I guess you were, no, when we did the mustache photo, I think it was the year before that. But I think we sat and talked at some point shortly before, and you were probably brushing me off, but I was saying, you know, if people haven't told you about being a dad, and I think Brendan was already a dad in the band at that point.
And Jake.
Oh, and Jake. Yeah. So I'm sure you get plenty of seeing all the kids, and now is it just still the three of you that have kids?
In the band, yes, the three of us. So both guitar players have 3. I have 1, but with the crew and management and all of Team Umphreys, I think we have 16 children.
Wow.
And 15 of them between the ages 0 and 5.
Wow. That's crazy.
It's incredible. So I was in the car yesterday driving back from taking my daughter swimming, and I listened to a lot of comedy, and Paul F. Tompkins, I don't know if you're familiar, another mustache comedian.
Oh yeah.
Is doing a great bit about dads. He's like, I'm at that age now where a lot of my friends are dads and they're firstborn. And he's like, and here's the conversation that I've heard a million times. It must come from the doctors after you get the baby that this is what you're supposed to tell them. And it's like, you know, man, I was holding my son and I'm looking in his eyes and I never thought I could love something this much. I mean, I created this, I made this, and I was dying because that is the conversation that every dad and every first child that you have with your friends, and you're just telling, it's funny to hear the response from those who aren't fathers yet.
Right. Yeah.
And get the textbook you can't believe that you could love this much. But you know, as cliche as it is and stuff, it's so true. It really
totally.
Is.
I remember way before I had kids, talking with a friend of mine who had a boy, and he was, I think, his son who just started college this year was probably at least six when he had his little girl. And I remember him saying, as much as that cliche is, like, I love my son. My son is my little buddy and he's amazing and all of that. But when I had my daughter, it was exponentially, I mean, it just blew me away how much more I could love another little human being, because for a little girl, a dad's love is just, it's not like with your son.
Yeah.
So you're starting out, you know, you've expanded your heart. What are you going to do now? So let's go back into the troves, into your history with your own dad. And for you, if that means kind of going into what his childhood at all or anything like that, by all means, go ahead and do that. But
yeah,
tell us about you and your dad.
Well, my dad, Randy Stasek, was born in 1951 in Pittsburgh. Actually, no, that's not true. He was born in Angola, Indiana. So he was a Hoosier.
Oh.
He's the oldest of five. They moved to Pittsburgh, I think, within his first year or first 2 years of his life. So he basically grew up with all of his other siblings in Pittsburgh, which is where I grew up as well until I was 12. And growing up where every one of your family members, and we have a large family. My dad's the oldest of five. My mom's the middle of three. Countless cousins and uncles and aunts. So growing up in Pittsburgh is a hardcore blue-collar steel workers town where people love Pittsburgh sports and you bleed black and gold. So from a very young age, my dad told me, I don't remember two or three, but he used to help me go to sleep. I could name every Pittsburgh Pirate and every starting defenseman and offenseman for the Steelers. At two and three, so when I was first learning to talk,
yeah,
I can only imagine how proud that made him. As I've done the same here with my daughter,
mm-hmm.
as we sit and watch the Pirates or Steelers games, and she loves hockey, which is great. So hearing an adorable 2-year-old try to say, you know, Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby, you know, it's hilarious, or Gregory Polanco. So I've done the same thing with my child, and there's definitely. That brought great memories back to me and our love for Pittsburgh together. And my dad and mom married. I was the first born. I have a younger sister. Very, very close relationship. My dad was a hardworking man, but extremely close with both of them and my sister. They just celebrated their 43rd wedding anniversary. And, you know, being in a band with six other guys, I see the relationships they have with their parents, and I'm gonna have to say, like, my relationship with my parents is pretty unique, because we have the mother father son relationship, but we also have a best friend relationship. I mean, my mom is a stand up comedian on the side.
Oh,
you can only imagine the filter that happens with someone who's trying to be a stand up comedian, and my dad on the other side he's not a stand up comedian, but he's a very very patient, very, very kind man with a big heart. And you know, another cliche saying, which I mean all the time, if I could be half the man that he is, I'm going to be an excellent, successful individual. But growing up, one of my fondest memories of my dad in Pittsburgh before we left is him taking me to Pirates games and us leaving before the innings and me putting my head down on like the headrest in the front seat. Nobody had car seats back then.
Yeah.
And listening to the baseball game. And, you know, on AM, so it's scratchy radio, and falling asleep and, you know, just having that love for Pittsburgh and that bond with my dad. There's nothing like a bond with your pops playing catch or seeing baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very true. I kind of had that upbringing from my dad and had that connection. And I've talked with somebody about it before that really, like, it's man to man as well, like, sports is just kind of one of those things where, you know, you could be wearing your Pirates hat and you could be in a grocery store and I'm sure you could start up a 30-minute conversation if you were to run into a fellow Pirates fan.
Absolutely. And it happens. You know me well. I'm not shy or not one to back off from starting conversation.
Yeah.
We're talking. So it happens all the time. And it happens even more with Pittsburgh, because I think the exodus from the 80s of all the people that were in Pittsburgh that moved away, and all the Super Bowls and the World Series, there's so many Pittsburgh fans all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Being in a touring rock and roll band, I mean, I have an app, Steeler Nation app, that tells me a Steelers bar in every city that we stop in.
That's amazing.
And I can find people who are from Pittsburgh. You have that common bond, and you sit down and you already have a certain a conversation starter and a likability to talk about all the damn championships we've won.
Yeah. So when did you and your family move out of Pittsburgh?
Okay, so my dad took a job in Kalamazoo, Michigan in 1988. And that was the first time where I really understood the significance of my family and my extended family. Because then all of a sudden, it was me and my sister, who's a year and a half younger than me. And we move up to Kalamazoo, and we don't know anybody. There's no more going to grandma's after school, going to your cousins, your aunt picking you up, you're going to the pool. All that was gone, and it was just my sister and I, isolated with my folks, trying to make new friends and, you know, begin middle school and high school, which is, you know, that's a tough period for adolescents.
Yeah, without even that.
Or not. Yeah, yeah, just making the move. And, of course, we went back to Pittsburgh as much as possible to see the family, so we made a lot of family car trips, which, I mean, I could do a whole podcast just on car trips with my dad. You know, locking windows and all that fun stuff. But this is when a big bond between my father and I happened, is when him being the oldest of five, his father got cancer, my grandpap.
Mm.
And that happened when I was accepted to Notre Dame, where my dad also went. So a little legacy there.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of pride with my grandfather being a grandfather of Notre Dame. He didn't go there, but my dad and I going there. Coming home, my dad was extremely close with his family, being the oldest of five. And when he got sick, I remember seeing my dad break down, because there's nothing. It's a really eye opener when you come home and you see your dad, you know, wiping his dad's butt.
Yeah.
And, you know, 40 years before that or 30 or whatever, he was doing that for him, and it had come full cycle.
Yeah.
And I was only 18, and I was like, wow, talk about kind of an eye opener and an understanding for that dad connection.
Yeah.
That was, you know, no tears yet, but that was a tough one for me to see going back. And I just had a whole other found respect for my dad, and then our relationship and our bond and our friendship. And, you know, that grew as I was in college, and I stopped coming home as much, because I was, you know, I was starting a band, and I lived in South Bend, and I did summer school, and I had a band, so I didn't come home as much. But that relationship with my father and my mother never became worse or lessened. We just grew stronger, even though I wasn't living at home anymore.
Yeah, that's crazy. My dad died of cancer when I was just before I turned 18 years old, and it was that summer after my senior year. He was home when it was really. It was basically, he didn't get diagnosed until early summer that year, and he died in November. So it was like incredibly fast. But I had that experience. Like, he went through some treatment that was basically out of Mexico, that was from Germany originally, which Ronald Reagan had been successful with. And so... Oh. My dad didn't really want to do the whole radiation therapy, chemotherapy, anything like that. And he was like, oh, I'll give this a shot. And they had a place down in Mexico, which isn't that far from us. And he went down there and basically lived in a hotel across the border for maybe about a month or so with my mom, and would just take a shuttle across the border into Mexico and do the treatments every day and come back. And he got so sick while he was down there, he came back up, and I mean, I had that experience of bathing, putting on deodorant for him, doing, you know, wiping his butt, like doing all of that. And it was crazy. I mean, you could just see the humility of that experience for him, like probably thinking that very easy idea of I used to wipe your diapers or wipe you and clean your diapers, and this is not the way this should be, and whatever. I can't even imagine how difficult that was for him. So,
and even different generations, for your grandfather, your father,
totally,
my grandfather, and my father. I mean, my dad's very lucky right now, in very good health, and expect him to be around for a long time. But I feel our generations of us being fathers in the world that we live in now, you know, it's, you're not grown up to be a masculine man with no feelings going to war.
Right.
And, you know, showing affection and being around as a father, it's just changed than when it was in the 50s. I think that's pretty obvious.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you were a dad in this day and age, the way our dads or a little bit older were kind of the norm, you would have like CPS called on you, you know.
Oh, for sure.
It's just for sure. Entirely different. I remember times of like the threats and getting very close to the, I will pull this car over, get you out of the car and spank your bare bottom on the side of the road in front of all the cars. I can just imagine nowadays if somebody was doing that, like how fast basically the SWAT teams would be coming out as somebody is periscoping.
Yeah, it's a different day and age too, and I mean I'm candid to talk about everything on here too. Like I have a daughter, she's 3. I've never laid a hand on her. I've been frustrated, and when I grew up, my dad, he was, like I said, he was pretty patient. I had to do some really bad stuff to get spanked or get a belt or anything like that. My mom was a little quicker on the draw, around with us. But you know, and I was even talking to this with my band guys, and none of us hit. There's just it's a different time, different era. There's as many times that I want to shake them and spank them, I don't, because there isn't anything good coming out of that. I always thought when I was younger, I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna smack the shit out of them because they're gonna deserve it, you know. But now having it, being a dad, I don't believe in that, and I do believe in having a. When dad raises his voice, I want that to be respected.
Right.
My wife and I talk about that when we discipline him. I mean, we got a 3-year-old who's very independent right now, and I want her to be independent and try different things, but I also want her to know when she's gone over the line. And I don't want, when I do raise my voice, for it to be misunderstood or be disrespected. You know, as a dad, you want that. You want that level of respect and know that you're still in charge. You're still dad.
Yeah. It's tough. My daughter is now, well, she's about to be 8, and our son just turned 4 a couple weeks ago. And he is so independent and so stubborn, and he knows what he wants to do. And he just does not like hearing no. He doesn't like you telling him that he's not doing the right thing. And he fears me. I mean, the way that, you know, we kind of feared my dad when I was young, and when my voice gets big, it scares the living tar out of him. And he just, the problem is that I need to find the right decibel range where I'm not making him shut down and just start weeping.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's Tim, it's interesting too. When you're younger, there's the fear. And then when you get to an older age in your teens, I remember my dad had the silent disappointment. And nothing cut me deeper than knowing I had messed up, coming home and just seeing that look on his face of just complete disappointment in my actions, and just being like, oh, I have failed. I mean, I would have loved to have been yelled at, scolded, grounded, hit, struck, anything, but it cut so deep knowing that I let him down. Because of the, you know, the values and principles that he raised me on, you know, I knew better than, I mean, I wasn't committing, you know, crimes or anything horrible like that, but you know, I definitely got into some trouble. But that disappointing look on your father's face—I don't know if there's anything worse.
Oh yeah, it's like, and even when they say it, you know, I'm just really disappointed. That's not how I raised you, or whatever. You're like, oh my god.
Yep.
What have I done?
What have I done?
Yeah, yeah. With our mom, she was kind of she was just overloaded. I mean, I'm the youngest of eight. I don't know if you know that.
Wow. No, eight. Holy mackerel.
Yeah. And it's kind of a funny story because my parents couldn't have kids. And this was back. So my dad was born in 29. My mom was born in 31. So they're even from a further back generation of, you know, as children going through the Depression and all of that kind of thing. So anyways, they couldn't have kids. They adopted, and they just started getting in a weird adopting train. I'm not really sure. My mom is she likes collecting things, so children might have been one of those things that she decided to collect. So they adopted five kids, and then when they were in their very, very young 40s, like just at 40, out of the blue, they had my brother. And then a year and a half later, also out of the blue, they had me. And it was like, you know, that, not to say anything, I'm not putting in a halo over my head, but we were like total scientific miracles because they had been trying for so long and couldn't. So, I mean, my mom was just, you know, it was good for her to have a strong day with no kids to discipline. And there were days where, you know, it was like, you all can go to your separate rooms and you're all going to wait till your dad gets home. And that was the thing of waiting till our dad got home and how heated would he be.
Oh, yeah. It's funny, too, because I was telling you before, my mom with her her comedy amateur career and stuff, at a very young age, we were exposed to, I think without my mom really knowing, watching like the young Rodney Dangerfield's Young Comedians, like R-rated stuff, really bad language at a young age. I think I remember watching, I was like 5 years old, and my mom thought it was Star Wars, and we were watching Alien.
And like
some stuff, you know, a lot of kids probably shouldn't be watching. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, probably shouldn't be, but and we were always exposed to that at a young age, and some serious potty mouth stuff, especially when Andrew Dice Clay, and I remember all that stuff coming out and going to school and doing the nursery rhymes and talking about that. But my dad worked. He worked, you know, early and late, and you know, that was more on my mom with the discipline about that. But we were very open with that type of stuff. I didn't live in a strict Catholic household where the soap was in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I had that friendship with my mom, and it's been great with music and comedy to share that with my mom and my dad.
Andrew Dice Clay was actually my first ever concert that I went to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What year? What year, Dice?
Oh, God. So my second ever concert was Elvis Costello, and he was on the Spike Tour. So that would probably be the way I would be able to gauge it out. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing it was probably 88, 89.
Yeah, I mean, that's when he took off.
Yeah, I mean, it was just about at the nursery rhymes time.
Yeah. And that's when comedians were rock stars. I mean, Sam Kinison. I mean, you have to really thank Rodney Dangerfield for all that, because he was such the giver and the godfather of getting all those guys out there. But Andrew Dice Clay and Sam Kinison lived like rock stars.
Yeah,
like real rock stars. It's crazy.
I mean, that wasn't even that much after Eddie Murphy.
Mm-mm.
I mean, he was, you know,
absolutely.
I think Delirious. Gosh, I was watching that, and I was probably maybe a freshman in high school at the time. So that was probably very mid-80s, 86 mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yep. Such, to me, I think the hardest artist to try and be is a stand-up comedian.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so difficult. And I think the way that the game has changed now, whether it's for musicians and for comedians, but with YouTube and social media, and these guys worked on bits for decades, and now at the swipe of a mouse or a fingertip, you can get all their jokes or other people's jokes, and
right. There's
just so many more people. It's so difficult to even get your special these days to be a comedian. I'm not a comedian. I think I'm hilarious. I'm not a comedian. But to try and do that type of lifestyle, I mean, you're going in, it's just you with a mic, and you have basically drunk people,
yeah,
you know, who are, you know, two drink minimums, five drink minimums, whatever, are getting hammered to heckle you, and you got to make them laugh. That is so difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
At least with music, we can go out there, and I'm hoping it's more to heal or have them enjoy. Sure, you get people that want to come out and judge and heckle. You get that with every sort of, you know, activity or being an artist in any way. But being a comedian, man, whoo,
Yeah.
In music, you can bomb and you can mess it up, but it's not like when a comedian really bombs or you have that heckler. At least in the music, you can be done like, okay, that was a bad show, but for a comedian, if it hits rock bottom, it can be super bad.
Yeah. Plus, if you start kind of bombing or whatever, to turn that room around is so difficult, I'm sure, to like bring them out of thinking you're just not funny at all.
Yeah.
As opposed to, oh, that song didn't work. Let's do this one.
Totally. Or if we were improvising.
Yeah.
Which is great with Humphreys McGee, because our loyal fans and the people who want us, you know, this is funny. Jake and I were actually talking. We were kind of laughing, saying, I feel like some of our loyal fans come and want to see us bomb. They want us to improv and just watch it just totally derail and have a train wreck and have to stop and, you know, maybe have a little laugh to it. I mean, we were joking, of course, but we thought, you know, I'm sure there's a handful of the guys who have seen their 200 plus shows that are looking for that or searching for that bomb. It's funny how in this world that we live in, and I find this to be true, that other people enjoy other people's misery or failing, you know. That could be sad in some ways, but it's interesting to me.
Well, and it's so kind of the way of the news, and now you have everybody who's a news reporter with their phones now.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I can tell you that my dad definitely did not raise me to appreciate that or to cheer for other people's shortcomings. He's always been, respect, integrity, and honesty have always been his three things that I think he's tried to teach the most. And it's always being a teammate, which is very important, that I learned a lot from growing up playing a lot of sports. When you're on a team, you fail together, you win together. And that's an important thing to learn. A lot of people don't get to play team sports. Sometimes they just, I don't know, golf, tennis, or maybe they don't play sports at all. And you don't really get to learn when you've let the entire team down or someone on that team has made the mistake, and how it's important for you to pick them back up and say, no, this is on all of us, you know? He taught me about all that stuff at a pretty early age, which I think is extremely important for younger kids to learn through sports, but also through music. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do that going out there nightly. If one guy's having a bad night, you compliment him and say, hey, man, don't worry about it. Pick yourself back up. You got five other guys out there killing it right now, and this is good. Nobody's Kobe Bryant and walking off the stage early. You know, I don't want to pull a Hoosiers and be like, my team is on the floor.
Yeah.
But that's serious stuff, and I thank my father for that, coaching and teaching me that at a young age.
We'll definitely come back around to that, because I think that I've always kind of seen I've probably started to write a blog post 5 to 10 times, tying in, and I've always thought it would be a great magazine article, tying in your band and sports, because it's just how much you guys are all into sports. And how much, I mean, Humble obviously is a product of that, but how much you guys all appreciate sports and love sports, and how important that, exactly what you were just talking about, that kind of team aspect to you guys as you're playing, and even as you're not playing in the quote unquote off season in between tours or whatever, I think is so evident when you look at that. And I think that helps you guys not only with your success, but with that kind of, you can tell in sports too, when guys just aren't having fun and when they're just playing for the money. You know, there's always been for me that cut and dry difference between college basketball and NBA basketball.
Yeah.
And you've got the guys who a lot of times are phoning it in and are getting their paycheck and they're excited about that and they've got their cars and their cribs. But in college basketball, that team is so much more important, and you can tell how different the difference is between professional and collegiate sports at that
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm not a big basketball fan. I do wear basketball jerseys because I live in Charleston, South Carolina, and mm-hmm. it's so hot that yeah. I just, growing up in Pittsburgh, I didn't have a basketball team, but my dad liked the Celtics, so I was a big Larry Bird fan.
Mm.
But I remember Michael Jordan having a great quote, and I can do sports analogies with music all day. We could do a 2-hour podcast of doing that. Joel and I just do that all the time.
I'm sure.
One of Michael Jordan's quotes was, and we remind each other in the band of this every night, is like, hey, we might lose this game or be losing this game or going out there, but somewhere out there, there's a 12-year-old kid who's coming to see Michael Jordan for the first time, and I'm going to show him Michael Jordan. You know, I'm going to go out there and give it my all, mm-hmm. no matter what. And that's the same thing we say to each other, especially when someone's having a bad day or you know, ready to phone it in, or it's been a rigorous month or something. You get out there and you'd be like, listen, somebody out there is a fan of Ryan Stasek and he wants to see him play bass. And I need to remember when I go out and put my foot on that stage and it's go time, I'm making music. I'm blessed to be able to make music for a living. And somebody out there is going to be stoked that I'm giving it my all. And I hope that they go home being like, damn, that guy was a badass.
Yeah.
That was awesome. You know, so that's rewarding to us. And then my other sports analogy, which Joel and I joke about is we don't have a season. You know, at the end of the year, there's not a Super Bowl trophy for us to hoist because we played the best year of shows
right.
against another band. That's why I always really interesting to me when the internet became such a popular, I almost want to say an easy way for cowards to hide behind keyboards and talk shit.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, you know, you're young and you want to please everybody and you go out and you play these shows and you go on, you read it. And it's not easy, especially if you didn't grow up with sports, to be criticized and have people talking smack about you, especially when they cross the line and get personal. But you're like, man, I just play music. Why are these people hating? Why is there so much hate? Well, because it's so easy to do.
Yeah.
To do on a keyboard. You go, it's just like in high school hockey. People were fighting so much that they said, okay, if you guys want to fight, take off your helmets, take off your gloves, and then you can keep your jaw on. And you know what? People stopped talking smack to each other because nobody wants to get punched in the face. It yeah. hurts. I've been punched in the face. I know it hurts. So that was always interesting to me. I was like, why are people saying, oh, string cheese is the best. Umphrey's, they suck. They're terrible. Oh, I love fish. I hate the Grateful Dead. I was like, who cares who you hate? This isn't a competition. It's not the Pirates or it's not the Cubs and the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Nobody gets a trophy at the end of the year. Nobody gets a, you know, like it's music. Everybody should love it. It should be for healing. It's not, but everybody wants to be a critic and a media person these days. Like you said, you know?
Yeah.
You get your 140 characters and everybody thinks people give a shit what you think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember one of the shows when I was talking with you guys and I was telling Joel a story about the Bort. And I remember like almost all the guys in the band kind of rolling their eyes right when I said that. And yeah. I don't know if it was because of that, but basically I used to visit the Bort like once every year to get everybody's votes on show of the year. And I would go through that and like kind of cross-reference everything. And that would be my choice for, okay, I'm going to buy these 5 shows this year or these 10 shows. And, you know, I can't even, I got sucked into the Reddit hole for about 5 minutes recently when I was kind of looking up stuff on Bob Ruff actually. And, I felt sick. Like it just is so disgusting to me, like the negativity and everything. And I just had to turn it off. Like I just can't take that stuff.
I'm glad you brought that up because this will go into my next Ryan Stasek rant. I have not been on the board for at least over 6 years, 7 years. I mean, all of us kind of had to take a step back and just be like, listen, you can't please them all.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom quoted that to me all the time and at a very young age to help me with my individuality and stuff that I would choose to do. She's like, listen, they're not buying your clothes. I can swear in here, right?
Yes.
She goes, they're not buying your clothes. Fuck them. I was like, yeah, you're right. Why should I give a shit what any of these people think if it makes me happy? And I've always been very confident in that era. But there was got to a point where in the band it was causing problems. We're like, listen, we play what makes us happy and what we think is quality and what is good. If people are going to rip us on it, we don't need to waste our time to go on there and read about it. Because no matter who you are, you know, you can act like you're made of armor. You got feelings under there, and there's going to put some chinks in your armor. You're going to get upset. Mm-hmm. It just happens to everybody. So we just avoid it, which really helps. But part of my New Year's resolution this year, my being a dad, what's important to me, I travel a lot, and I see, and I'm not judging anybody. This is just my own personal testimony, my own personal choices. I quit social media, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all of them for the entire year this year for my own reasons. I'm not judging anybody. I think social media is great for a lot of useful outlets, for a lot of purposes. I mean, Joel is our social media guy. Mm-hmm. He uses Twitter for his news to get he just uses it for everything. And for me, having a daughter and being on the road for half the year, when I come home, I found myself at sometimes nonsensically flipping through Instagram to catch up just so I hadn't missed anything.
Right.
Looking at people's food and what, it's just stupid shit that I don't care about. No offense. I mean, I just don't care. And I told myself that if I'm at home, how much time am I prioritizing in just even being on my phone, period, and not being there for my child and for my wife? Mm-hmm. And it's become such an addiction. When I travel, I used to get beers at airports. It's almost impossible to sit down and have a beer and have the guy next to you, you know, start up a conversation or talk to the people on a plane because everybody has their beaks and their phones and their headphones on. And I'm like I said, I'm okay with that. That's okay with me to do that. I choose not to do it. And it's been really, really easy for me not to try and get stuck. I deleted all the apps, so I don't find myself trying to be like, oh, I got to go on there.
Yeah.
One of the best things that happened for it is when I did this West Coast run. Because I'm not on Facebook or Instagram, I don't know what's going on in a lot of my friends' lives that I would normally know because of status updates. And I actually had a cup of coffee or a beer with friends. I was like, holy shit, that's going on with you? This is fantastic. This is great news. And then I tell them what's going on with my life, and we had old school conversations about our lives that just isn't always presented on a social media platform where you know it. And with kids, there's such a scary time now with screen time and I'm all about it when you need to do it. I mean, if I'm traveling on an airplane with a child going across the country, she wants to be on an iPad and watch a movie, please. It's better than her having an exorcism and me buying drinks for the entire row on the plane, you know? So I get it. There's a time and a place for it. But I've really been excited to come home and be able to put my phone away. I mean, I use it. I use it probably more on DraftKings and stuff now that I don't have any social media, so I've been betting on sports. But I still put it away, so I'm home, and I want to be the dad when I'm home. I'm not, ignoring my child while she's asking me to watch her do something or play a song with her or something because I'm too busy scrolling through my damn phone.
Yeah,
that's really important to me. So it's August now? It's been 8 months. It's really been no problem. I'll probably get back on it next year, as there are some useful things that I found that I'm missing out on. But as far as being able to stay off it, it's been pretty easy.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, because I know it was a very visible difference, the excommunication of Stasek on all social medias. And I know it's funny too, because they come and go. I remember, I think you and I kind of fell into Vine around the same time. Yeah. And
that was fun.
Yeah, Vine was pretty interesting, and I was going to bring that up too with regards to comedians, because that's one of those other things that, you know, there are people who became Vine famous, and whether it's comedians or singers or whatever. But I was going to ask you if that had been a purely parental choice, and if it was more so out of that drive to be more present, to be more active with your family, with your daughter, or if it was a little bit in the personal, like, I'm out there, there are a lot of people who have access and want access to me, I now have a daughter. Is that something that you were thinking about before and that you will go into differently when you get back?
Absolutely. And I think you've touched on all of those, and it's a few more things too. I also found out when I come home, you made a comment before about an off season, and there really is no off season for Umphreys.
Yeah.
We do take vacations, and there's times where I'll lay down the base and went to it. But I was saying to myself, how many minutes of the day, or hopefully not hours of the day, am I on the phone where I could have a base in my hand practicing, or I could be, you know, working on, I'm going to be 40 this year doing some physical fitness. My wife loves to work out and I need to get back into that. So I was like, why am I wasting time doing this when this is more important to mm-hmm. me? Being with my child, being outside, playing the bass, making music, being more health conscious, you know, or not health conscious, having a beer with some friends.
You know, that's
more important to me than, and I'll admit too, man, I'm a very narcissistic social media user. Like my wife told me, I didn't even know there was a news feed on Facebook. I would always just look at my own page and, you know, read comments and do something. Yeah. I was like, oh wait, you mean everybody's stuff is on here? I don't really care.
There's other people on Facebook.
Yeah. I'm half joking.
I know.
But, you know, when I come back, I think it's going to be more for, you touched on something there interesting too, which is I do have a daughter and there are a lot of weirdos out there. And there's definitely safety precautions you need to think about and take seriously. My wife is you know, as a mom, you know, she's more aware of that and everything too, and letting me know. So I don't know. I found it to be a little weird. I don't want to know or let everyone in the world know where I am, what I'm doing exactly
right.
when it's happening. I don't want people to know that I'm out of town for 2 weeks and my house is empty and I have a bass guitar here that someone could come steal or something. Like that's my privacy, and you know, I have security, so if anybody's thinking about that, it's not gonna happen.
and just, but, so you know, if those 2 weeks do come up,
I got a good alarm system. But you know, I mean when I get back into it, we'll see. I'll take it day by day and see what happens with it. I think Instagram might be the one that I go back, because that seems to be the most interesting to me.
It's also helpful that they made it a little bit easier to switch through accounts.
It's a sensitive time now too, where you have to be careful. Like before I had a daughter, like I said, I think I'm hilarious. And sometimes that hilarity doesn't translate to everyone else.
Right.
You end up finding that. And it's scary to think that there's a digital footprint of everything that you post, say, and do. So that was another reason why I almost wanted to get off for a year. For example, I thought it would be hilarious to do a 2 week Instagram segment talking about, you know, a wonderful prose written about the food that I had eaten. And instead of taking a picture of the food, I would take a picture of my shit after I was done. Like, there it is after. And I did it. And I did it. And I got a bad backlash. I thought it was freaking hilarious. I think there was a small handful of people that did as well. But, after I thought about it, people were like, unfollow, this is disgusting. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, why do you post pictures of your lunch? I don't give a shit what you ate for your lunch. I think it's a little more interesting. You can see how my digestive system is working. There's a little bit of science to this one. But after I did it, I was like, you know, maybe my daughter, when she's 13, doesn't need to flip through and say, wow, my dad was posting pictures of his shit. you know, I don't know if I'm winning in that category. So saving my jokes more for over a gin cocktail with friends, you know, not something that's going to be a footprint, a digital footprint for somebody to go back and look on and go, you know, that wasn't that funny. And Ryan, you're not a stand-up comedian, so you really can't get away with the things you think you can.
Yeah. You got to give those ideas to somebody else. So when was it that you actually met your wife?
Mary Welch and I actually met.
It's a horrible segue. I'm sorry.
Pictures of my feces. Yes. How'd you meet your wife? That was a perfect segue. We briefly met at a pool at the Marriott at Red Rocks. And I was dating a girl and she was dating a guy. And I was inebriated. And I remember her walking by and somebody said, I said, who's that? And they said, that's Mary Welch Fox. And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? Her name is Mary Welch Fox. You know, we were friends for years before we even started dating. We started dating in 2008 and got serious in 2009, engaged 2010, married in 11, pregnant in 12, daughter in 13. And we're having our 5-year anniversary this November after my 40th.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you were just saying that Brendan just turned 40. Are you guys are pretty much, sorry, Joel, aside from Joel, are about the same age, yeah?
Yeah. Jake, Joel, and Brendan are now in their 40s. Myself, Chris, and Andy are in our late 30s.
Okay.
The youngsters.
And for those of you who don't know the band, I'm making that joke based on a long-running inside joke on Joel. So
yeah,
I'm not being...
quick story, and I apologize ahead of time that it does have to do with fecal matter again, but this is a true story.
I know
story.
You wanted to talk about my wife, but I'm just going to bring it back.
Just going to go back to poop. We played Brendan's birthday at Higher Ground in Burlington, Vermont.
Yes.
And a female fan, yes, a female fan. I don't know if she was moved by my low bass, if I actually hit the brown note, but she had an accident on the dance floor.
No way.
Do you believe this? I'm not making this up. Not making this up. The cops, much to their shit grin, had to escort her. And what I can't believe is that they cleaned it up that quick. I don't know who the low man on the totem pole was for that, but I would have quit.
Yeah, I'm done
somebody
here.
Somebody had to do that, and then people still stuck around. I mean, I don't know about you, but whoo.
How early was that in the show?
I don't know. I got the text from the manager, and he sent it to me the next day. I was like, wow, that is interesting. I don't know if it has anything to do with Brendan's 40th birthday, but that's definitely never happened to our knowledge at an Umphrey show before.
Is that kind of like the paying up for your beers at the end of the show tab? You guys,
I don't know. I think I'm proud, man. I'm gonna say it was the brown note that my bass was hitting. I think I had something to do with it.
Those are some massive bombs that you definitely want to make sure that you tell people.
I'll be like, oh yeah? Well, I hit a note so low I made a girl take a shit.
Yeah. So you guys are now heading closer to the school phase with your child. Is she in preschool now?
Yeah, actually, my daughter is in Montessori school.
Okay.
She started last year at age 2. She just had her first day yesterday. I had a really proud dad moment. You know, I flew home yesterday from Syracuse. We had a very hot outdoor show run, you know, like 106 degrees is what it felt like the whole tour. So came home, was pretty tired, pretty beat. I picked her up from her first day of school. She was so stoked. I took her swimming. And my wife, God bless her, who's been working this whole week too, was tired. She's like, listen, this is your duty tonight. You got to get her in bed. You got to get her down. It's been a nightmare this week. So we got in the room, and it was story time and time to hang out. And I could tell that she didn't want to go to bed. And I was trying to see how I was going to pull this dad move off without her crying or throwing a fit. And she was cracking me up. I mean, being gone for those 4 days, I felt like I'd been gone for 4 months, but she was hysterical. And she's like, Daddy, I want to play a song for you. So she went over to her little mini electric piano, and she goes, this is a gift for you. I'm like, it's a gift? She's like, yeah, I wrote you a song. I'm like, you did? What's it called? She's like, Star Wars. I'm like, okay, can you play it? And she plays it, and she's just, you know, pounding on the keys, being like, Star Wars, Star Wars, someone gets sad. And I am just dying laughing over here. I can't stop. I'm like, I can't put her in bed right now. This is too good. I mean, my daughter's writing songs and just in that full make-believe and imagination at this age with 3, which is so awesome to me. Makes me feel so good, so proud. And she's on a huge Kung Fu Panda kick. But I, you know, she knows she's not allowed to practice it on people. Not allowed to hit anybody. So we were learning Kung Fu moves. And I was trying to persuade her into calming her down with like deep breaths and zen. And it worked. I finally got her off the piano, did some Kung Fu, and then she laid down. And, you know, we have our nightly You Are My Sunshine. She gets 2 You Are My Sunshine songs. That's her jam.
Nice.
And got her to stay in bed and go to bed. But as a musician father, to have your daughter making up improv songs and singing, man, it was a highlight. You know, I'm so proud.
Nice. So how tough was that transition? I mean, knowing that you'd already kind of seen other guys in the band do it, but how difficult was that for you going from within the span of Well, even though you'd already been with Mary Welch for a year or so, but those years of being, not saying that you were runaround guy in a band, but, you know, you're single in a band, married in a band, and now with child in a band, did it change everything? And for you guys in general, now that there are so many kids, is there a time, was there a time that it was like, okay, we need to kind of plan this out a little bit differently when we tour? And
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes back to when we opened this podcast, when I was talking about Paula Tompkins, that comedian, mustache comedian. You know, when you become a dad, that cliche, it's all about the kid. And it really is. So when you're out on the road and, you know, there's a different perspective as a father when you say, hey, this is my bread and butter. This is my job. This is how I make money. This is how I spend my time. This is how I'm going to balance my time. This is how I'm going to take care of my health. You know, I'd be bullshitting you if I said we didn't hit it pretty hard in the younger days. And you just, as a responsible dad and as a parent, and knowing that when I want to come home, when I said before, I don't want to be on the phone, I want to be there. I don't want to come home so hungover that my Monday is shades down and I sleep the entire day. I mean, that's what it used to be. I used to come home and I put the shades down and order some Chicago's pizza, and I would sleep the entire day just to get back to feeling normal. And now, you know, we have like a dad roll the day before. I don't even drink. Just get ready to come home and be fully aware and fully there and on point. So, you know, we've talked about the scheduling and the way we travel to balance. We've always done it differently with Umphrey's McGee from the beginning. We've never been that rock band that says, hey, you have a record, go out for 3 months, stay on the road, kill it, kill it, kill it, kill it. That just doesn't work for us.
Right.
A, we tried it once and we all wanted to murder each other. And B, you need to have that separation. And my wife and I even love that separation. There's times when I'm home too much. He's like, will you fucking go back on the road so I can get some shit done? You know? So we've always been open with our communication with what works for each guy. And we've always been family and dads matter. You know, they're not more important than another band member, but they're highly valued and worked around to make sure that all of that is working. Yeah. Because all of our kids and wives are extension of the Umphrey's family. And we take that very seriously. And, you know, we take care of our crew. We're very proud of that about our band. Not everybody's a practicing Catholic, but most of us were raised Catholic. And I think that one strong value that we came out from being raised like that is the open-minded and communication, like those retreats, talking to each other, putting your feelings out there so you understand where everybody's coming from, and you're able to, you know, be democratic and say, okay, he needs this time off here. This isn't going to work here. We can't go that hard like this. And a lot of that's being centered around being a dad.
Yeah. And do you guys kind of gear up together for like all family, all kid kind of show moments together?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Dominican holidays is one of them that's fantastic. And, you know, I could see how a young 22-year-old single dude who's coming down there wouldn't, you know, his existence and how what he's going to do down there is way other end of the spectrum of how I'm spending my time there. You know, not only am I working and having gigs, but I have my family and child. And for us, it's fantastic because we're all on the beach. We're all at a resort. There's a pool. There's an ocean. All the other bands are there with their children. So all the other people who work in the same business, we're all able to get together and see what each other's dads and uncles do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really special. Down in Charleston, when we do our Chucktown Ball, a lot of the guys from Chicago will bring their families and we'll rent houses out on the beach because it's like a vacation. It's fantastic. And that's another great time for the kids to get together and hang out with each other. Unfortunately, we don't get to, like Amelia doesn't get to hang out with Jake and Brendan's kids as often as we would like to because they're in Chicago and South Bend. But the times that we do get to do it, it's extremely special.
That's so awesome. Just fast forwarding ahead, thinking ahead to all of their years down the road of having not only this friendship that they have with each other, but coming back together to see those people, you know, as they are, whatever, 10 years old, young teenagers. I'm kind of playing you guys into your 60s now.
We'll see how it goes from there, because right now they have the reverence. They're like, they're so proud. They're like, oh my God, daddy's on stage. Mm-hmm. I'm sure as they get older, at some point it's not going to be cool.
Right.
I'm looking forward to seeing like when we hit the mark when it's like, yeah, that's not cool. Actually, it's a funny story. I was in Aruba last year with my wife and daughter, and we were at an outside bar, and there was a band playing, and these young girls were dancing on the dance floor. And we were just off the side on the sand, and my daughter wanted to go up and dance with them. They were probably college age girls. Mm-hmm. So my daughter was dancing with them to this killer band. This band was great, great bass player. And Mary Welch and I, when we finished our meal, tried to come up on the dance floor and dance with our child, and she immediately kicked us off. We were like, what? You're only 2.5 and we're already not cool? I expected like a 10-year buffer before daddy and mom weren't cool. I was like, come on, you know? And Mary Welch and I would like to think that we're pretty cool and that she just shot us down. She's like, no. And she went and hung out with these college girls. It was hilarious.
Oh, that's so funny. All right, well, I think we basically went around the Rosie of the Dad grouping here and, you know, talked plenty about shit in toilets as well.
I apologize. No, I don't. No, I don't.
No. So thank you again for being on. We will wrap this one up, and then we'll go into another episode that I'm sure you guys will definitely want to listen to. I can't really give you, it'll probably be a week or so after this one is released, but The Fork in the Road with Ryan will definitely be something worth listening to. So thanks again, Ryan.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that episode with myself and Ryan that went to some very interesting places that I wasn't really expecting it to go, but that's kind of the way it is when you are having a open discussion with Ryan. He's a great guy. I really enjoy talking with him every chance that we do get to talk with each other, and this was obviously a little window into one of those kind of conversations, which had its purpose and its point for this podcast, obviously. But you can, well, I would say that you normally can find Ryan on his various social media outlets, but he isn't really using them this year, so he should be back. I think his Instagram, well, I'm not even going to go into it. You'll have to find him after next year. Ryan Stasik, Stasik. And he will be on those things maybe starting next year again. But you can find him touring around and playing his bass in magnificent ways with his band, Umphreys McGee. I will tell you that they are a prog rock kind of band. They fit in the jam band scene, quote unquote, because they basically are completely improvisational, mainly during their shows. They have songs. It is not just them doing full-on improv, but they are an improvisational jam band when they play, and they rock very hard. This is not your mama's jam band. Well, maybe it is, but they will melt faces, and they are darn good at it. I'll say damned. They are damned good at it. I put the little E on this episode for a very good reason. But they are really good at that, and I hope that some of you become new fans. I know that they are very big with myself, my wife, a bunch of my friends, my brother, and this is, again, not my mom's jam band either. I don't think my mom has a jam band. That would probably be Dizzy Gillespie. So anyways, you can find the podcast on daddyunscripted.com is where the original blog is, as well with some of the older posts. You can find us, if you didn't already, on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and I would love for you guys to subscribe, leave a review, leave a rating on there. You can send an email to me at daddyunscripted@gmail.com with any additional comments you want to make, things you would like to see in the show, in our progression, guests you would love for me to have on that could even be you or your husband or your dad, or somebody specifically that is somebody I may not be able to get a hold of. You'll hear in our next episode that Ryan suggests Jim Gaffigan as my next guest, and I would love to get Jim Gaffigan on. So if any of you know him, this is the perfect podcast for him, right? So anyway, thanks again for your participation, for listening. I really appreciate all of the support and everything. And we will continue to move on and talk to more people about being dads. So a little late addendum to this episode, as this is one of the first episodes to be graced with the music of Umphrey's McGee on it. I kind of put a little pause in episode releases. I had a couple that were pretty much done editing, but I wanted to work that agreement out with the management of Umphrey's McGee. So huge, huge thanks to Umphrey's McGee for allowing that partnership to take place with the podcast so that we could have their music on here. I think that adds a ton to the production value here, and obviously much better music than the royalty-free stuff that I was using. No offense to those musicians. And this just worked perfect timing for the Stasic episodes to be able to include the music of his band. It's kind of a no-brainer, right? So I'm glad that that was able to happen. Big thanks to the band and huge thanks to KB for allowing that to happen again. Like I said, you should definitely check them out when they are in your area. And you can also find their new album in November, their first mashup studio album coming out, called Zonky, that you'll be able to find on iTunes and Spotify, as well as pre-ordering off of their website. Going to be very cool. And stay tuned, keep your eye out for the Fork in the Road episode with Ryan, where we talk a lot about music and sports, pretty much, and his history with both and what they mean to him. So thanks again.